Hello, amazing parents and caretakers, and welcome to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I'm your family empowerment coach, Celia Kibler. I'm a mom of a blended family of five kids. I'm a grandma of nine kids, an author, a teacher, a speaker, and a consultant with over 40 years of training and real-life parenting experience. I'm here to offer you practical, doable tips, strategies, and techniques that will pump up your parenting skills and create peace, love, and laughter throughout your family. In addition, I'll be interviewing some great humans that are on a mission to make your life a better, happier, and healthier life. So let's not waste any time and get started with the next episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I am really excited because today I have my dear friend Maggie Graham on, and you just won't believe this woman's story. I'm telling you guys, sit, get comfortable, get some coffee, tea, glass of wine, some water. For me, it's always water, you know, and because you're going to be blown away by what this woman's family, what she's done with her family, because she's a superstar. So let me tell you who Maggie Graham is. She is a home management and parenting strategist, and she specializes in homeschool integration. And you're about to learn how she has mastered this, because she is the master. So welcome to Pumped Up Parenting, Maggie. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to be here too.
So Maggie, first tell our listeners you're all about your amazing family and what you have accomplished, and speak about these multitudes of children that you have.
Okay, so I am a homeschooling mom of 11 children.
And 11. Okay, let me intervene. Homeschooling mom of 11. So this is not she had 11 kids and she sends them to school so she gets a break. No, this is a homeschooling mom of 11. Okay, sorry. Please proceed.
Yeah, take a drink of water. Okay, you're good. So I've been married for 30 years this year. My children age, they range from 28 down to 7. And I have graduated 6 of my children already, having homeschooled them all the way through graduation and into several into college and others into their careers. And I am still educating 5, and 6 live at home. So through COVID, I had 9 kids living with me up until just last year. So all the way into like their 20s. And so they began to fly the coop in a good way and have their own, you know, they had their lives, but now they have their own apartments and fun things like that. So it's exciting. I have going on 5 grandchildren already too. And I just barely turned 50. So that's at least the summary that of the panned out view of who is Maggie. A screenshot. As far as my family, married to the same man. Yes, they all came out of my body and all those fun questions everyone asks. It's been an amazing journey, and it's been quite, a nonstop nursing and pregnant one.
Yes. You are a mom rock star. And so you can clearly see why I'm having Maggie on, because if you're going to learn homeschooling and life from anyone, this would be the woman to learn it from. So tell me, Maggie, and I guess I've never asked you this question. Did you come from a large family? How were you parented? Like, what was your childhood like?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I did not come from a large family. I am the third born. I have 2 older brothers. And however, I did come from a family mindset, I would say, that I heard my mother tell me, having grown up Irish Catholic, that she did, that she was going to have 12 children. So obviously, somehow in my childhood, she had begun having children, and we had 1, 2, 3 like that, literally within less than 3 years for her, that she just kind of cranked out her children. And when my father was going into his doctorate program, PhD stuff, she I think, said, let's have a break. Let's take a breather for a minute. So there was a gap right there. And so my first 10 years of life were just the three of us. But I always in my mind heard my mom say, oh, I always wanted 12 children. And so I think that must have been a seed planted of the fact that anyone would even consider such a thing. Because, you know, that's the difference is never hearing such a thing and then having it be a norm that someone might think that. I didn't have any preconceived ideas of what someone wouldn't want. So she loved children. I always had children around me. She babysat people's kids. I grew up loving family and loving children. 10 years later, my mom decided, hey, if we're going to have these kids, clearly we're not having 12, but into her 30s, she was going, I blinked and 10 years went by. So she had another baby and thought, oh, we'll just have three more. We'll have a second set. We'll be fine. We'll get six. We'll be done. And then she had that last sweet, amazing girl that she is and said, I'm done now. So we have four. And my sweet little sister was my first baby in my mind. I just fell in love with her. And I literally love her like a mama. And now we're just best friends, but I've always loved her as if she was my first child, because that's the attachment I had to her.
Yes. Oh, that's so wonderful. And as a mom who loves being a grandma and my 9 grandchildren, I know your mother probably feels like, I hit the jackpot with Maggie.
Not only that, my mother has 26. My mom has 26 grandchildren between me and my three siblings. So my sister has 8. I have 11. My brother has 5 and the other has 2. So she has got the jackpot and now moving on to great grandchildren. So they are going to be abundantly blessed. Abundantly blessed.
That's incredible. And yeah, she must have been planting those seeds in all of you. You know, that's 12. So what a blessing over and over and over again.
Over. Really
wonderful. And so you know, I think about your 11 children all in your home together. And mind you guys, you know, Maggie does this, you know, she lives a very average life. She doesn't live in a mansion where everybody gets their own room. You know, I believe, Maggie, your house is the same size as my house, where my husband and I and my cat live and my fish. And yet you have all these children. I'm pretty sure we live in the same square footage of house.
Yeah, I can share a little bit about that really quick, just to
give a little
context. So when my first, we started having children, we'll get into parenting in a second, but when we first started having children, we lived in a condo that was a 2-bedroom condo and it was 900 square feet. And I had 7 children in that house. Oh. I had home births, most of them. The first 2 were hospital, but the rest were home. And I fit 7 children in one 10x10 or a little 8x10 bedroom. So talk about, I believe it was miraculous expansion. I really believe that God amplifies the space that you choose to fill. And that there is always, this is my motto. And I had a little pillow, and I still do, that I bought many, many, many years ago that says, if there's room in the heart, there's always room in the house.
I love that.
And so my heart has always been open to whatever the Lord might bless me with and give me with. I see children as a blessing and as a gift. I know the world sees them as an inconvenience and a financial burden, but I truly believe that here's my real stance, that if God is the author of life and that he's decided and he tells us what children are, that they are gifts and blessings, then that's exactly how I ought to see them. And therefore, why would I throw away a present? If you woke up Christmas morning and you said, oh, I don't want that one, let's kick it out the door and burn it, then that's not very receptive. And so you don't know what you're throwing away. You didn't open it yet. And so having the openness to just let God give me those blessings. And so it's a trust factor. My husband and I made that decision before we had our first child. But it was 2 years into our marriage. Granted, I had already, you know, it's not a birth control conversation, but we could go there someday. But we had made a shift in our thinking early on of a conviction that shifted from birth control to trust. And we shifted to going, you know what, do we really control this anyway? We all fool ourselves and think we're in charge of our lives, but we know who really is. So that's where it broke down. So from then on, it's been an open, I will take, you know, the Lord gives and he takes away. I mean, I've had 20 pregnancies. So if we're going to talk pregnancy really quick, I've lost 9 of my 11. And so it's not that it's been, oh, that sounds great. You have all those children. Isn't it wonderful? You've never experienced loss. That's not true.
Right. And I know it's hard. I did a miscarriage podcast, a podcast about miscarriage, with my daughter, who had 5 miscarriages, who have the 2 children that she has. And, you know, as you know, we've talked about before, there's always struggle with success, you know, and there's always things to learn from everything. You know, I that's how I live life. I mean, if something happens and it's a challenge, I know that there's someone going through more of a challenge out there. And I know that it's there for me for a reason. God put that in place for me because that's my path. And whatever that path is, I may know what it's for now, or I may not know what it's for now. And now at 63 years old, and I'm sure you realize this too, you look back on so many things, you're like, oh, that's why that happened.
Because absolutely.
That happened for this to happen.
Absolutely. And the, everything that we go through is for a purpose. When we have that belief that it's not, we're not victims, we actually are a integral part of our journey and in someone else's journey, and that our struggle is going to be someone else's breakthrough and their, you know, their encouragement to know that they're not alone, like you said. So to circle back, I currently live in a 1100 square foot house. We were able to, at one point, to switch. So we got 200 square feet, which was great. And now we have 13 of us in this 1100 square foot house. And I'll just say that God is good. And what? I do not. Well, I had 4 cats actually, because I'm allergic, but we did have some pets. We don't normally have very many because of allergies, but mostly kittens because we wanted them to kill all the gophers in the backyard. So we had wonderful cats, and ours, since the day we moved here, just passed away like literally last month. So it's been a very long, beautiful life. And so, yeah, right now we are pet free, but I believe we'll have some kittens in our future very, very soon.
So let me ask a question, because you know I'm on this mission to stop 1 million parents from yelling at their kids.
Yeah.
And if you are a mom of 11 and you are homeschooling them all, and you are in a space where you need to be very organized and you need to know, you know, what's going on. It's not like, you know, you have the right wing and the left wing and you go in that wing and, you know, you're in this space together. So there's a lot of on top of each other. How, and I know you as a very calm, collected person, you know, I just, when, you know, we speak, you know, you're just a calm, you're just so, your voice is so nice. Everything about you is so kind of restful. And so how were you able, when I talk to parents that yell at their kids all the time, they have one child, how were you able to keep your calm and keep life at a consistent pace with growing your children, educating your children, and making them awesome grown-ups, because that's our goal, is to make awesome grown-ups.
Amazing adults. Yep.
How were you able to do that with 11 children and taking on all the responsibility of every aspect of those children?
Yeah. I would say several things. Several things are factors. And I would say that's not a magic pill, first of all. And it's also a journey. So just know that the number one, you mentioned grace and things like that. I would say that having grace with myself first has been a huge factor of recognizing how I am being in every moment. And what is it that caused it? Well, number one, they didn't come all at once. Okay. Parenting can trigger us, right? So that we have our children and they just show up, and then they show up in their own self, and then they're reflections of us. So how we respond to what we see in them is usually what triggers us to often inflame, or our expectations of them, therefore our expectations of ourselves. So it can be so convoluted. But as far as how have I done it? Number one, I find my peace through knowing who I am. And I would say that that has been an integral part. I mean, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. So it's like, I have a faith in the Lord and I get my peace. I'm able to tap into a source of peace that is surpasses understanding. So I would say that in our own flesh as human beings, that we are going to always choose the selfish choice on purpose because it serves us. And sometimes that can be, now we want to have a higher calling. And if you don't believe in God, it's fine. But you often want to, we usually are working to raise ourselves up to a higher being, a higher, you know, belonging and personhood and how we relate to others. So, so I believe that everyone has that innate need and desire to be the best version of themselves. And so, so for me, knowing that I am able to tap into the one who made me, I got my peace there, first of all, but it didn't mean that I wasn't without the trials. So when I found myself, which I did, I am not perfect. I'm not that little Mary Poppins mama who walked around and always said, you know, say things sweetly and lovingly. I have my triggers, and I got to the point where I would be frustrated. And if I found myself, my throat tightening, you know, in your spirit, when something squeezes, right? That squeezing at your throat. I think it was number one, being honest with what's going on inside of me. What am I thinking about? What am I expecting that is causing me to be frustrated? And is it really the children and their behavior, or what is it saying about me? So I've learned so much on this journey of motherhood, of how to raise children, but in a peaceful way, by knowing who I am first and how I fit into this picture. That what is my role as their mother? Is my role to be in charge all the time and dictate the universe? Or is my role to create a relationship with each of my children and connection, so that therefore, and this is where it really helped me all along the way, I'm just a conduit and a funnel to help point them back to our co-Lord Savior person who created them. And if they tap into whom God made them to be, our life, all of our lives are going to be so peaceful. Because if everybody tapped into who the Lord wants them to be, and that they had an inner guide, so to speak, right? They had an inner control. My mom called it self-government, right? If you can manage yourself, I don't have to manage you. then we're all going to be in a much more peaceful place. Now, granted, that's great, especially as they get older. But there's aspects of parenting for those young ones, these little toddlers, these children that are hopeless and helpless in a sense, right? And they need everything from you. So you get to decide ahead of time how you're going to handle it. That's the one other thing. Yes. So number two was, I was a proactive. I'm like the founder of the proactive mom movement, really. It's proactive motherhood. You can and get to decide exactly how you want to respond in any given situation. You're not a victim.
Being proactive instead of reactive. You just make that decision and you plan.
Yes.
And you figure out what, you know, when there's repetitive things happening.
Yes, you're taking in data, constantly taking in data. And here's the other thing, be observant of everyone around you, your children, but also other families. Be observant without judgment. So you can be observant of other people and learn that proactive strategy by observing other parents, other children. Look at how they speak to their children and the results they're getting. And you get to add that to your data box and go, do I like the outcome? Look at their older children. How have they turned out? Did those methods, and ask that parent, did you use those methods with your children when they were younger, or did you do something different? So having conversations, developing a lot of, and building lots of evidence to understand, oh, if I yell at my kids, they're going to turn out like this, right? Or if I'm harsh with them, this is how they're treating their sibling. So there's things that we can learn and watch. Always ask people for their wisdom, but throw out what does not work for you and what doesn't resonate with you. I say, right, take the best, throw out the rest, and have an observing eye and a discerning eye. So I watched carefully and I thought, you know, I don't want my kids saying no to me. I don't want a rebellious spirit in my children. So I'll just start with, I'm going right off. I hope this is following a good flow of what you're thinking. But I talked to my children, and I wanted my children to be
there. You talk to your children.
Yeah. Yes. Talk to them.
With them, and they're so happy to contribute and come up with their ideas of way to resolve problems. Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yes. Yes. That's key. And but yeah, then we'll get into the listening to kids too. So there's both sides of the spectrum. But here's the key. When I babysat a lot as a child, okay, as a teenager. So I got to observe a whole lot of parenting. I got to be a babysitter who is not a disciplinarian, but yet it was my role to care for and keep these children safe. So I learned through experience of how to be creative about consequences, because I wasn't allowed to spank their children. And so I didn't really want to, but some of them needed it. And so, but I was able to Look and see what were the results those parents were getting and think, the kids obey me, but they're not obeying their parent. I find that interesting. I learned that as a teenager, that there were certain ways that I could be around the children of my expectation. And there's a being of authority. There's a place of respect and authority because of my position. So there's partly that. So I proactively, again, thought about what kind of kids do I want them to be like? Not only what kind of adults do I want to create, absolutely wonderful people, but how do I want my experience as a mom to go as I'm raising them? Do I want to be insecure or do I want to be thriving?
Yes, like create a vision. You know, I always impress upon my parents who are clients or not clients, you know, they're just part of my audience, that, you know, you created this family, create a vision for it. What was your purpose in creating this family? Don't you have a mission for you and hopefully your children create a mission for themselves. You should have a mission and a vision for what you want your family to be, what you want the culture in your family to be.
So I have a belief that you get what you expect.
Yes.
You're gonna get whatever it is you come in expecting. If you expect your kids to be disobedient and rebellious, guess what you're gonna get?
Disobedient children.
That's right, because you expect them to rebel. You expect them to misbehave and you expect them to disrespect you. But I would challenge any parent to flip that over and realize that if you expect your children to be loving, if you expect your children to be respectful and honoring, then you are going more likely to receive it. And that doesn't come from a dictatorship and lording. It comes from development, like we talked about, of a relationship and communication and from very clear boundaries. I am a very firm mama. I was weird. Okay, let me just tell you, I was weird in my cult. I've raised like three separate generations right now. If you separate kids by threes or so in my lineup, I'm moving on three or four different sets of friends that have kids that are peers that they raise their two or three kids. So they had three or four kids. So the friends that I was around more when my oldest children were young, I was crazy to them. I didn't have 11 children then. I still had three or four like them. But I'll tell you right now, I think I started with a mindset of having lots of children. I didn't intend to. I was only going to have three or four, my husband and I. But I'll just tell you right now that my mindset was, I'm going to train my little child to be content. I'm going to train my child to be obedient. Early. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to expect them to fall into it. So from infancy on, I behaved differently than I noticed several of my peer friends who were new parents too, the way they parented. They weren't as proactive and they were more grasping and more reactionary to their parents.
Yes.
If they were raised
to their parents.
They brought their past experience of how they were parented into the forefront, and they reactionary parented. And here's the thing, it's full of blind spots. We all have blind spots as parents, but if we are taking our childhood, a lot of times we're children grown up bearing children.
Yes.
So if I'm maintaining my childish emotional response to how my mom disciplined me or my daddy disciplined or trained me, then I'm not going to serve my child as an adult. I'm serving them as a co-child.
Exactly.
And that really can cause a lot of issues and a lot more permissiveness in parenting. You'll find parents that go, oh my gosh, my parents spanked me. I'm so righteous. I'm never going to spank my kid, right? You might have this belief that that would never, ever happen. I'm not saying that kids need to be spanked all the time, by no means. But I'll tell you right now that the loving discipline and correction of a child is totally different than abuse and horrible behavior and controlling. That's not the same. Having very healthy boundaries for our kids helps them become loving individuals.
Yes, you have to have boundaries and limits. Because when you have no boundaries and limits, children actually think no one cares about them. You know, I use the example of, you know, when a child's allowed to just, you know, be outside for all hours of the night, they could be 8 years old and they're out at 9 o'clock at night. And if you walk up to that child and say, how come you're out so late? Their response almost every time will be, nobody cares. And then you may think that's just a response, but they literally believe nobody cares.
Yes.
And nobody does. You know, when you're saying, oh no, my kid, they'll be able to know, they'll be able to, you know, do stuff. And yes, to a point they can guide themselves, but they have to have boundaries and limits in place, because you know what, guys, we all have boundaries and limits in place in life. You grow up, you have limits. You can't go in and rob a bank. That's against the law. You know, you can't, you know, there's limits, there's boundaries that we all experience. So don't make your child don't make them grow up in this like make-believe world. You're not doing them any benefit.
No, that is exactly right. So there was, you know, here's the deal. You get to be here. It's funny. I tell parents this all the time. This is how you get to be selfish. It's going to sound really backwards, but I'll tell you, the most selfish thing and loving thing at the same time you can do is train your children well. Is to train your children well. Help them become the people that you want to hang out with as a friend, as an adult. And so what does that mean? That means that if I want to go to church on Sunday, or if I want to be at the doctor's office and I want my two-year-old or anyone under, you know, a 6-month-old to 3-year-old to sit quietly on my lap because it's not appropriate for them to run around right now and touch everything and get into stuff or pitch a fit, then I'm going to proactively at home. And here's how I did this peaceful thing to help me stay calm all the time is to practice at home. Anything I wanted done outside my home, I didn't wait for a meltdown at the grocery store for them kicking and screaming. I practiced at home and I sat them on my lap on the kitchen, at the kitchen table or on the couch. And you know what? I did it beyond when they wanted me to. If they went like, I want to get down. I would say, oh, no, we're going to sit for a few minutes. Teach them how to be bored. Teach them how to sit still and be okay. Yes, because it's a beautiful, quiet space. And if they're pitching a fit, well, then they need to sit there longer. Exactly. And you hold them.
Creativity that we as adults that did not have all this electronic stuff where you had to be entertained 24/7 a day, 7/24, however that works.
Yeah, how many there are in a day?
But, you know, that's when creativity comes out. That's when, you know, prayer, spirituality,
imagination.
Thought. You get like the mind goes wild, you know, imagination storms out is when there's boredom, when they have to think of ways to entertain themselves.
Right. And I'm talking, there's room for that. That's a whole other, like another layer of this. But in the super basics, I'm saying I've grabbed my little toddler, grandchild, or whatever, and here's the deal. You need to set up opportunities to intentionally thwart their will. You will not get them to be obedient, compliant, and loving and responsive to you outside your house if they're not going to obey you in the house. Absolutely. So teaching your child to come when you call, I call that attentiveness. That's coming when you call, hearing my voice. When I yell for my child, if I do down the hall and go, so-and-so, you know, I don't have to say, come here. I just speak their name. And all the way till their adulthood, I did this as little children. I would speak their name and they knew that they are to drop what they're doing and come running. Yes, mom, what can I do for you? So here's the deal. It sounds crazy. Again, I'm the crazy weird one, but I'm telling you that creating a life that you love with your children starts with creating atmosphere and opportunity for you to train your children. Training and discipline, I believe, are totally misunderstood. Everyone thinks punitive discipline is like to the harshness and spanking and whatever, when actually, if you are disciplined, you know how to tell yourself no. The simple definition really of being disciplined is knowing and being responsive to appropriately in each circumstance, right?
And holding. It teaches kids individual responsibility. They learn to take responsibility for their behavior, for what is expected of them. They learn to live up to good expectations, not negative expectations, you know, and the thing is, when that happens, when they are able to, you know, sit and listen and you know, follow through with themselves, yes, you become proud of them, but they become proud of themselves too. You know, I could do this. I accomplished it. You know, it's not as easy for toddlers to understand it, but when you are like, thanks for being so good while I was on the phone. Thanks for being so good while we were at the doctor's office. They're making you proud. And when children always want to make their parents proud. And when they know that when their behavior is good and it's the choices that they're making are good choices and you're proud of those choices, they will do more of that and not the negative stuff because it's working. It's making you happy and it's making them happy.
I think that's really key. If we all understand that our children want to please us.
Yes.
The belief that our children want to please us.
Like that sometimes.
Yes. It's a really big shift because some people don't realize that there's an innate desire for those to look at us and affirm us and want to believe that we're doing the best. And you said something interesting a second ago that I want to key in on because you mentioned if, you know, thank you for being good while we're at the store and something for being good. Here's my challenge to moms. I'm all about the word good. I can use it freely about having good behavior, negative, you know, positive and negative behaviors. Here's my challenge to encourage any parent. Find the higher language. What other language can you use other than even good and bad? Because a child will say like, oh, I'm good and I'm bad. Right. So because if you're not happy with me, I automatically go, well, you call me good here. They're going to automatically think they're bad often because it's the opposite. However, what if we switch it? And this is one thing that I've cultivated a lot is being really specific about the character quality that they exhibited.
Yes.
You were so patient in the store today. I am so proud of you for being patient. I loved how you sat next to me and you put your hand on my leg and you waited for me to give you my attention. Like there are things I've physically done. And here's the thing, I trained them in the atmosphere at home and also out on what to do in the circumstances. So give your kids that leg up. Give them the roadmap of positive behavior and responses. So if your kid is responding to you with no, let's say you tell them, honey, go get your shoes and socks. We need to go now. And they go, no, right? Or why? Here's the deal. The very first time, pretend you're you and me and we're role play and you ask me why or say no. Here's my response. Oh, honey, we don't ask why and we don't say no right now. You obey first. You may ask me later. We obey first. We ask questions later. I will welcome the question, but if it's to delay obedience so that they can justify finishing the Lego game they're doing or waiting, they don't really want to know why. They want to ask you why to delay the obedience. They don't need the logic and don't entertain the West. You know, I'm all about telling kids all the reasoning, but you help them by saying, identify no and why are the biggest distractors for children to throw in a parent's face. And first of all, rebellion of a no is like, well, helping my kids go, listen, do I need more information? Like, I can't get my shoes because they're outside in the mud. You said I couldn't wear them yesterday. They may have a reason. So I give them okay, honey, instead of saying no, mom, can I give you some more information? Literally, I can tell this younger kid. Usually I'll go, do you need help? There's all lots of ways we could go about handling that if they're super little, but I'm talking about a kid who's able to look at you in the face and say no, then give them, find out. Oh, wait a minute. Literally I had my fifth child, when she was about 4 or 5 years old, she recognized that all of her older siblings never said no to me. It was the weirdest thing. I guess somehow she tuned in that no one ever says no to mom. How is this possible? The word never comes up. Never. And so I think she realized that she's seen it in other friends that they do. And she thought, I wonder what would happen if that happened. She literally thought lightning would strike her. She tells this story and it cracks me up because she's going like, she was always so compliant. And so I told her to go do something at one point. And honestly, I ask and say, please, I'm always very kind. But the thing is, if it's in a directive, it's a directive. She turned around and she went, no, and ran. and she went to go do the obedient thing. Yeah, she ran and did it. And when I was like, okay, so she comes back and I laughed so hard. I said, can you, what just happened right there? She's like, I just wondered what would happen. I'm like, you went and obeyed. Like, what was this with the whole no thing? And she's like, I just was curious. I didn't know what might happen if I said no, because no one ever says no to you. I mean, nobody. And it was the cutest thing ever. And I was like, you are adorable. You're adorable. But you can create that.
Yes.
It's loving.
I think a lot of it is knowing what you're working with, knowing what a child is, knowing their limitations, their brains are not developed because you don't develop, fully develop a human brain until you're 23, 25 years old, knowing that they're full of emotions, knowing that they don't have logic, knowing that in order to control those emotions, you have to teach them. So if you're not in control of your emotions, how are you supposed to teach them how to be in control of their emotions? You are the role model. Everything you do, you give your kids permission to do. So if you act aggressively, you yell no, you do whatever, you might as well just say, look, whatever, you know, you got permission to do it because I did it. Whether you think, oh, well, you know, we're adults, we're allowed to, no, sorry, that's not the case. Whatever you do, you give your children permission to do. And when you set up boundaries and you set up limits and you set up understanding of why things are the way they are, you help them understand. And, you know, it's like, you know, I always tell people, you know, if you want them to sit for a long time, don't forget that they have energy. So burn first and then sit down, you know, let them burn that off. Know that before, you know, it's like with all this schooling that they're doing now in front of a computer all the time. They need to burn energy. They need to get away. You know,
it's crazy. I mean, when I think of five-year-olds having to sit there and learn to read from a, I mean, I can't even imagine. I know that it's happening. I mean, even in preschool, I mean, all the things that people are wanting us to accept as okay and normal. Sorry.
That's okay.
But I wanted to say,
sorry. Water, it's fine. Fine, we don't care.
Yeah.
Podcast, whatever. We all gag too. I always have my paper here.
Yeah, you're good with water. So these kids that are in school and they're expecting them to, you know, sit at cubicles and have these boundaries around them and never speak to one another. And I mean, the damage that's being done by teaching these children not to share anymore, not be able to trust a friend. It can get so ugly and the conversation can be so deep and painful. Only those who really see the damage already understand, I think. Yeah. Others that are still in a fearful state have a different mindset. And I get that.
They're really social. You know, it's like when I talk about stranger danger and how much I don't like the term stranger danger, because 80% of people that children meet are strangers.
Absolutely. They're all going to be strangers.
Of every person they ever meet.
Right.
You're making them afraid of the person in the grocery store, the mailman, who else is walking down the street. They're all strangers. So afraid all the time, they're going to grow up neurotic.
That's right. So here's a real key thing to understand. Nothing healthy is going to come from cultivating fear intentionally.
Exactly.
Nothing. There's nothing that is going to be positive, because fear is a detriment to ourselves, period, down for the core level of our bodies and how we were created. It is not a healthy place to be. It's not from who the Lord, you know, who made us. So cultivating understanding and love and kindness, all those things are so much more important.
Yes. And a lot of kids today in COVID land, there's a lot of fear being set up in the families that, you know, no exposure, no nothing. We're never leaving this house. We haven't left this house for a year. And the kids are like, they have to be prepared for when they come out of the house, because they're afraid. The sickness is out there. The zombies, they're all out there.
And it's always in us. Yeah. We know that. Yeah. We could talk about science and like, it's always been.
That'd be a whole nother podcast, but.
The whole podcast thing for that.
To constantly be afraid is so hard. And it's bad for them.
Let's get back. I want to share just a little bit more about how to cultivate a peaceful atmosphere in your home.
Yes.
And how important it is that from no matter how many children you have, and how homeschooling has been the best gift to our family and our children, because it has allowed us, I call our home a cauldron of character. every opportunity of interaction, whether that be doing your math, reading aloud, playing a toy, a game with your sibling, is all an opportunity for you to grow in character of how to relate to one another. The world is made up of relationships, and that's all there is. We can talk about money and everything all day long, but ultimately all we live for is relationships. And that is what we're being attacked on. Number one, we're being attacked at the relationship level to live in isolation and fear. So we already talked about that for a second. So I'm going to put a pin in it, but that is exactly what's happening. But what's beautiful, let's forget that and realize that we get to decide to be different. We get to decide to take ownership of our relationships with our children and help them cultivate healthy relationships with each other and seize every opportunity to feed our children positive ways to respond. And so I want to just share how important it is when I was talking about the training and the discipline idea that training comes before discipline. Training can look like discipline sometimes. If I'm teaching my toddler not to touch the electrical outlet, I don't just kid-proof my home. I home-proof my kid. So I have done this from infancy. I believe through now experience of 11 children and more because of all the people I've been influenced on beyond that, that children know more than anyone gives them credit for. And they are so easy to be trained. They want to please, they're easy to train, and they love it. Yes, so yeah. When you believe those three truths, right? They're easy to train, they are capable of way more than you think. A little three-month-old can be taught not to pull her father's beard or grandpa's beard. They can be taught not to pull the glasses off of grandma's face but no one, if you believe that your child, oh, they're too little to understand. Well, number one, love you dearly, but you're wrong. We know how brain works and they are fully capable. And through repetition and consistency of how to handle awkward situations, they will be conditioned to respond. We have conditioned responses. If they cry when they're poopy or peed, then they're going to be able to condition that, oh, if I reach for and grab grandma's glasses, I might get a little thump of a flick on my hand, even at three or four months. Don't be scared. You're not spanking your kid, but you're giving them a little bit of trigger, physical trigger that says, oh, that's a no. Oh, don't. And you say, hands down. See, I don't tell my children no. Really, I don't need to. I tell them what I want them to do. That's one of the huge reasons why I've never heard no. It's because when I instruct them, I rarely have to use the word no. I might say stop. I might say turn around. I will call them by name. I will say to my little granddaughter, you know, I won't say her name right now, but I will tell my granddaughter, I will say, excuse me, and then have her look at me, turn around. I will say, hands off. She has to know to do this. So you train that response in little bitty ones who can't speak yet. I taught my little toddlers to use sign language. I'm sure other mamas are doing that too. While they're learning to eat, if you teach them more, it's so much easier for them. I'm not going to have a baby going, wah, wah. They'll say, more. I taught her how to say milk, more milk. Oh, you want water? Okay, great. A little baby under 1 year old can tell you if they want water or milk. It's amazing.
Specific instructions too. Yes. Not general instructions.
That's right. And so honestly,
understand a general, like set the table.
No. Yeah.
Step by step instructions. Can you put the plate here? Can you put the napkin on the plate? Like, you don't want to set the table.
Exactly,
like,
right. Yeah. Sequential things, they have to be broken down.
Step by step, break them down. And a lot of times when children don't respond, like, you know, how many parents walk into a playroom and go, clean those plays up.
Oh my goodness. You know?
And the kids stand there or they get back to play because they're overwhelmed. They have no concept what clean those plays up means. You understand.
Yeah.
Be specific.
And be careful. So here are other gifts, really practical. Let's be super practical. Because the gifts you can give yourself and your children, let's just say you have only toddlers under 5 years old. Okay. You have maybe multiple or even one or two, and you want to say, clean up the room. The best gift you can give them is number one, not to have a huge toy box. Do not buy a toy box that you throw all the toys in and dump them, because guess what happens every time they want to play? They pull every toy out because the tiny little man they got at McDonald's is on the bottom of the box and they'll take everything out to find him every time. So you learn quickly how to create your own compartmentalizing. you organize things better for them. And when they get out something, you get out that one or two bins alone. You might have a boundary on the floor. I would lay a sheet out or a blanket. I teach my newborn babies what I call blanket time before they can crawl. So they know what boundaries are, physical boundaries on the wall, like on the ground. I on purpose make sure that the blanket that I use is of a different color and extremely bold and clear. So that if I lay my little baby on a blanket that's pink or blue and the carpet is brown, when they're a little toddler and they're two, you know, several weeks old and they look over, I can show them where their tiny hand reached over the carpet and I say, stay on the blanket. From a little infant, they've learned stay on the blanket and they know where off the blanket is. I go off, on, off, on. I do it 25,000 times while they're an infant. And you do that, then you expand their boundaries. When they get older and they're toddling around, I took the blanket away. And now the carpet that we have, the edge of the carpet to the kitchen floor is a new boundary. It's a new yes, no, yes, no. Yes has a smile. No has a discipline, hands off. It has a don't cross that line. They learn it. And that way you do it to the front door. No kid's going to run out that front door.
Key, repetition and consistency.
That's right. And loving consistency and immediate response. If that child toes that line, and they will, they'll look at you and they'll be like, oh.
Right.
And they'll kind of look like they're going to toe the line. You're up already. I do not count to three. There is immediate obedience because you know what's right. Why give them a hemming in? That's an excuse to say she doesn't mean what she says, number one. Number two, how lazy is she going to be today? Number three, I guess she's mad enough she'll come over.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, there's just so much wisdom here. And, you know, and I hate to cut this short, but because you and I could talk forever. But I just, you know, am always, you know, fascinated to learn all the wisdom that you have over raising 11 children and keeping everything organized and controlled and knowing children, knowing what you're working with, knowing how they respond to things, knowing what you need to put in place and being proactive instead of reactive. When you're reactive, when you don't have boundaries and limits, it causes chaos in children. You want to make your kids chaotic. You want to make them scream and yell and overwhelmed all the time. Don't put boundaries and limits into your house. Don't create repetitive routines. Don't do those things and your kids will live in a chaotic world and they will behave chaotically. So Maggie, I hate to cut you short, but I have a call in 5 minutes, so I have to cut you short.
That's totally fine.
Again, we can have another podcast together. First of all, you have a really exciting thing coming up, so I want you to tell everybody that gratefully I'll be a part of about your awesome conference that you have coming up.
Awesome. So yeah, I have an event coming up next week and it's going to be for the whole month of April where we are interviewing amazing, amazing people who can help people who are thinking about homeschooling, who have maybe been exposed and dealt with the whole COVID homeschooling environment and they want something better for their kids. And if you are feeling like this might be a calling for you that you're going to shift, then you don't know anything about it. Or even if you are a homeschooler already and you just would love to have more peace, tranquility, and joy in the journey of your homeschooling, then this event is for you. It's called Equipped to Homeschool. And I know that Celia will give you the link to get registered. It's a free event. And there are opportunities for you to participate as a VIP, which I would really encourage you to tap into because we're going to actually have more live Q&A with every speaker, which will be so powerful. But the event is going every day. You're going to have a different interview. But really, the bottom line is this is going to help you be able to gather the information maybe you feel like you've been missing, maybe gird up some of the confidence that you've been lacking and be able to make a decision or move forward in the decision you've already made to homeschool and do it in a powerful and effective way, and to be excited to change your children's lives through the experience you can create in your home, because being their educator is so rewarding. And honestly, it is such a rewarding experience for a mom because we get to learn right alongside with them. We get to create our own, like tap into what we never received. So I want to just encourage you to register if that's something that you're interested in. And also feel free to reach out to me if you have questions about homeschooling. We have a Facebook group we're creating with this as well, and you're welcome to just, you know, put your questions in there, but it's going to be incredible. And I would love to hear from you guys.
Oh, I'm super excited for it and grateful to be a part of it because it's so needed nowadays. People really need to make intelligent decisions about whether they should be homeschooling or not, because we're presented with this opportunity. So maybe it's for you, maybe it's not, and that's okay.
Yep,
but that's the way you're getting educated on whether you think you should be doing this or not, instead of just, well, maybe I'll try it. You know,
right.
Here you're learning from experts. So I'll put the links in the podcast so you can sign up. It, like we say, it's free. It starts April 1st. And I'll also have links of how you can get in contact with Maggie, because she's amazing, as I'm sure you've heard through this podcast. And I'm so grateful for you being on. Thank you, Maggie, for being on the podcast. And we'll have to do another one. And thank you for being here. And all of you listeners, check out Maggie. Check out this event, because it's huge. And it'll give you a lot of the answers that you have questions for. So everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. And I'm grateful that you spent the time here with me and Maggie. I wish you days full of peace, love, and tons of laughter. Laugh more really is the best medicine. And Maggie, thank you. And thank you, listeners. And we'll see you next time on the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Be sure to head over to pumpedupparenting.com to grab your free copy of the Patient's Playbook. Wishing there was a manual for your toddler? Well, good news, now there is. You can pick up your copy of Raising Happy Toddlers, How to Build Great Parenting Skills and Stop Yelling at Your Kids, my newest release on Amazon today. Tune in next time for more tips, advice, and strategies as you continue to pump up your parenting and create childhoods that everyone can blossom from. Have yourself a really fun day. Bye-bye.